If you've been listening to Jessica Leahy on hashtag AmWriting at all, you know thought-provoking, actionable advice is her trademark. But have you taken your relationship to the next level and picked up her latest book, The Addiction Inoculation, Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence? Peggy Orenstein called it a vital look into best practices parenting, with advice so smart that we can all benefit from her hard-won wisdom. Conceded, it does not make a good gift in most social situations. Be warned. But it does make a really helpful read, and it's out in paperback, so grab one today.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Hey writers, I'm Jenny Nash, and this is the Hashtag AmWriting podcast, the place where we talk about writing all the things, short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, and proposals. One of the things I think we do really well on this podcast is address the long game of writing. It's not just about writing one good book or pitching it or selling it, but about the work of doing it over and over again. Of succeeding and failing and persisting in the work of writing. That's why I love this conversation with Tiffany Yates Martin, who is an author herself under the pen name Phoebe Fox, but who also for 30 years has been a developmental editor working with major publishers and New York Times, Washington Post, and USA Today bestselling and award-winning authors. She is a respected leader in the writing education field and my friend and colleague. Her new book, The Intuitive Author, How to Grow and Sustain a Happier Writing Career, addresses the long sweep of a writing career. And I think there's a lot for all of us to learn from this book and this conversation. Welcome, Tiffany. I'm so excited to have you on the Hashtag AmWriting podcast.
Me too. Thanks, Jenny.
You're a repeat customer here as a guest, so it's always fun to have that. And as I mentioned in the intro, we're here talking about your second book for writers called The Intuitive Author, How to Grow and Sustain a Happier Writing Career. And I have so many questions to dig into with you. And before we get into the questions about the book itself, I would like, and I think our listeners would love to hear, you have a really multifaceted or multi-pronged writing life where you write fiction with a traditional publisher and you write these nonfiction books for writers that you bring out your own self, and you seem to have a lot of fluidity around how you're going to publish, how it's going to be out there. So could you just talk a little bit about that for your own self, about what it feels like to be publishing in all the different ways?
I love this question because it is so relevant to so much of what I write about in the book, which is taking control of your own writing career, because it's a, you know, it's one where we often feel like we're just waiting for something to happen for us. So I don't write fiction so much anymore, but that was something I was doing for years. And my first four books, I really wanted a traditional publisher, and looked for an agent, found one. I tell this story a lot on my 113th query. Tried to quit at 100 and a writing friend of mine wouldn't let me, thank goodness. It took us, I think, 2 manuscripts and multiple rounds of submissions to sell, I think, my second manuscript. And when we finally did, it was to a small press, which A, was the only offer I was getting. So I was very grateful for that. But B, they were just starting out. And so it was a very, I thought, generous offer in the sense of the royalty share and the support they were giving and the terms of the contract. So I did that for 4 books and I was contracted with them for the 5th. But at that point, I had started to realize that my priorities and theirs were different. And I don't want to say I panicked, but we were really close to publication and I realized I didn't want this anymore. So at the 11th hour, I pulled that book and thought that was the end of my writing career, because I thought, oh, my name is mud now with this publisher, with my agent. But my agent wanted to resubmit it. And though that one and the next one sold to a traditional publisher, which had always been a goal of mine, Penguin Random. I always want to say Random Penguin, which I have a great mental picture of. And then when I did these nonfiction books, so I think I'm unusual as a writer of fiction because I've always said that editing is my heart. And that's the thing I identify most as, and it is. I love editing. And when I started doing books for authors, the first one was about editing, and the second one is about building your writing career. I didn't want to give up the rights to those. I knew that I wanted to have control over what I did with them. So I deliberately decided to self-publish those, indie publish. But what I love about it, sort of in hindsight, and I think that's how we appreciate so much of our lives, is when we kind of tie the pattern. You have talked about pattern recognition as an editor. And to me, that is so exactly what we do. But I think it's what we do in life too, looking backward. So I look back and I realize I love that that has given me experience in all these different paths, because I did each of them for valid reasons at the time.
Yeah.
And also changed course for valid reasons at the time based on what I wanted for my career, which basically is what I'm talking about in this new book.
And you mentioned that you wanted to control the rights. You had a very specific experience in which you bought back the rights to one of your books. So this was not a theoretical desire for you, right?
Right. Well, you know, I think especially newer authors, you don't realize that you just want to sell your book so badly and get it out there on shelves. You are selling the rights to that artistic property, that intellectual property. And that's fine. It's great if you're getting something back from it that you want. But yeah, the fifth book I mentioned for the first publisher, they had the rights to it. And so they were willing to let me out of the contract, but they were going to, it wasn't an advance situation. So it wasn't like, give us back what we gave you. It was like, yeah, you can have the rights back if you give us this amount of money. And so I had no way of knowing if I was recouping any of that. I literally was paying to own a book I had written and had not been paid for. So it was a pretty big leap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that experience and what you're talking about here, the reason I'm so interested in your experience of you understand a lot of the different ways one can bring a book out, and a lot of the work you do as an editor is for writers who are in the traditional publishing path. So it sounds like you're very agnostic about how a book, I always say publishing is a tool. It's not the goal. It's a tool to, the goal is to get the book into writers' hands. And so it sounds like you just firmly sit in that same space.
I love that concept. Yeah, it's a tool. It's not the carrot. It's the thing that gets you to the thing that you ultimately want, that I think most of us ultimately want, which is to share our work in whatever way suits our goals the most. So yes, that is very much how I feel about it. And each one suited my goals in a different way. I don't believe in this stratification of means of publishing. I do work with traditionally published authors, but I also work quite a lot with small press and indie published authors. And I think any way you get your work out is valid. And I object to treating, for example, I think sometimes there's the idea, I've talked to authors who say, well, if I have to, I'll indie publish. But really, at first, I'd like to do this and try to traditionally publish or whatever it is their goal is. And that's great. But sometimes I see that get in an author's way because they've put so much weight on, I guess, a gatekeeper saying, yes, we accept you, that they're not really looking at the actual terms of what does this serve what they really want for their career and what's really best for them. Like hybrid publishers, like I think that can be a great path for some writers, but also for other writers, I think they think, oh, a publisher has chosen me and also it costs me this much money, which great. If they're offering you something that's of value to you and that's worth it, then that's a path for you. But if they're not, you really could do a lot of that on your own, potentially for less money as an indie pubbed author. And have you considered that? Or have you not, because you feel like it's not as valid because nobody gave you the yes?
So these books for writers, you're very well connected in the writing universe and very well respected. And so when you bring them out your own self, then you have to, the burden is on you to get them out. I think the burden is always on the author to get them out. So it's not that different. But what has the experience been like for you on the marketing? Once the books are out, how has that gone?
I think nonfiction and fiction are different in this way. With nonfiction, I do have a really robust platform already built up because I've been doing this for 30 years. And as you said, I have some recognition because I'm out there, you know, teaching and speaking and with the books. So there's that that's helpful. I do have a built-in group of people who, when I publish something, I can already say to them, hey, I have a new book, and there's some immediate interest.
That was me. Yay.
I've been fortunate enough to make wonderful friends in the business over all these years. And a lot of my friends are really well connected. Like this interview we're doing right now came about because I had heard about you, I don't know how many years ago, Jenny. And I think I wrote you like a fan letter or something, didn't I? And I was like, hey, why don't we know each other? And so you happened to be coming to Austin and we met for lunch. This was what, 4 years ago, before the pandemic.
It was before the pandemic, yeah.
So we hit it off. We had a great time. We sort of stay in tangential touch just because we're both part of the community. And now here we are all these years later, and you are hosting this podcast and were kind enough to invite me on. So this is, I talk about the importance of community, and it is, I put this in quotes, networking, but it's also, you are just, you're building your community. You know, you and I didn't befriend you 5 years ago because I thought, you know, I bet in a half a decade she'll invite me to do something good.
But this goes to your premise of this book, The Intuitive Author, which is that it's a long game. Writing a book and being an author and building a career is a really long game, and there are a lot of parts to it. And this idea of resilience over time is, to me, what the big takeaway was, that like your this book is fascinating to me because it's, you're not candy coating anything, you know, you're telling the truth of what you see and what you know, and yet it's a very hopeful book about being in this game and in this for a long time. That those two things are really present in it. Was that a conscious, like, are you conscious of that in terms of your voice? Like, you know, I'm going to bring the tough love and the reality, but also I'm going to be hopeful, or is that just organically how you are?
I think it's just organic. I am both a realist and an idealist. And I know you've seen this too, because you are enmeshed in the industry and have been for such a long time, but there are realities that are very daunting in this business. And I think if we go into it without knowing those, that's when authors begin to get discouraged and disheartened and even want to give up, because it's not this rosy picture that maybe we had before we understood what the business really was and what the actual realities of it are and the actual challenges of it. And they are legion.
Yeah.
So are the rewards. And the one thing I do see in a publishing environment right now that's increasingly difficult and challenging because of competition and cuts and just, you know, this fascination with the shiny new debut author or what have you. But the flip side of that is authors do have an opportunity to have more autonomy and agency than I think they've ever had before. The publishing industry has really been democratized. So that's a long answer to your question, which is to say, you probably saw me beam when you said that. That is everything I could have hoped this book would be, is incredibly realistic, but also really hopeful and hopefully motivational, because I do think we have the tools to create the career we want if we understand the realities under which we're doing it.
Yeah. And maybe we could define your idea of what you mean by a career as a writer. What does it mean to have a career as a writer and to have a long career as a writer? How would you describe, you know, what the premise of that for your readers?
I'm very glad you asked, because I think I always take that as understood, and I don't think it is. There is a misconception, or at least to me, it's a misconception, that you don't have a writing career until you're making a living from it. But for those few listeners, I imagine most listeners of this show probably know, most writers don't.
Yeah.
So that's not really a very good, I guess, barometer of the success you're having, or even the career that you're having. When I use that term, what I mean is you have a writing career if you write and you want to share your writing in any way. You are building a writing career, whatever that looks like. Maybe for you, you're writing your family history and you're going to indie publish it and give a copy to everybody in your family and extended family. And that's it. Cool. That is your writing career.
Right.
In the same way that, I guess not in the same way, but, you know, I think of it as other passions and pursuits we have. We wouldn't talk about like your gardening career or your piano playing career unless you were trying to do it professionally. But for me, I think it does us a disservice to define it that way, because it can be so challenging and unlikely that most of us are going to find a way to make what we would consider a healthy living from our writing, without right. doing things that may or may not gel with what you actually want out of your writing.
Right. And this concept strikes at something very near and dear to my heart. And I know you touch on this in the book for sure. But this idea of, if you're not going to make anything from your writing, if the ROI, the return on investment, is low, or the odds of making a living or making a lot of money or whatever your metric is, if that is not going to happen for you, does it make any sense to invest in your education or your growth as a writer? Or, you know, when I say it's near and dear to my heart, because people will often say, well, why should I invest in a book coach if I'm not going to make that money back? Or, you know, take it down a notch even from that. Why should I invest in a 3-day writing workshop or go to an expensive conference or take a course or whatever the thing is? You know, shouldn't I just sit here and figure it out on my own, because that's free? And, you know, there is obviously, there's so many different people and kinds of writers and arguments and all the things, but I always, like you mentioned gardening, and I always talk about golf, like the golf industry, like the golf education industry is massively huge because people are interested in learning how to be better golfers and they find joy and satisfaction in that. They're not going to make any money from their golf, right?
Yes. But,
but I think what's tricky is for the writer navigating that path of, well, well, you said it before, what do I need here? What do I want for myself? If I'm writing my family history for my family, that's something different from if I'm trying to reach readers or I'm trying to get a certain sort of book deal or be in bookstores or elevate myself into a speaker or all these different things. It goes back to knowing what you're doing it for, right? For the writer.
I think it does. I actually will often tell, in fact, I have a Get It Edited free downloadable on my website that talks about hiring any professional really, but it focuses on editors and also coaches. And one of the things I suggest asking yourself is why you are doing it. Like, if you're doing it because you think it's like a traditional business where if I put this money into the business, it's going to pay off. It may and it may not financially. It will pay off for you in other ways that are valuable. Like, yeah. You use golf. My husband's a pickleball nut and he'll go pay to be in a league. He'll go pay to take a clinic. I go pay. This is the most ridiculous expenditure I have, Jenny. I pay money to a personal trainer to make me work out. And I don't do it. And then we lift, I do a lot of strength training, like I'm lifting weights. And I'm kind of a scrawny person, as you can see, but I feel stronger than I have ever felt in my life. I feel more fit. I have more energy. I am not going to be a professional bodybuilder. I do not make a, quote, ROI with this. There is no financial return on my investment. The return on my investment is for me because it makes me feel better. It improves my quality of life. So I would agree with what you're saying about this, that yes, if you want to be competitive in a market, is this a service that you can pay for that may help you do that? Yes. But is it a guarantee that if you spend this money, that is what you're going to get out of it? No. And knowing that, I talk about this in the book, is it still worth it to you? So you talked about what you want, what you need. I totally agree with that. Do you want this thing to help you, you know, finish your manuscript or make it help you polish it up or get objectivity in a way that you don't have on your own or whatever it is you're hired to design your cover, to do your formatting, whatever it is you're paying for someone to do. Do you want it? Do you need it? Or is it something that you think you could do on your own, which is very viable for many things? And what is your time worth to you and the learning of it? And then what are your values? I talk about that in the first part of the book because it's the foundation for all of this. If your value is making money from your work, then that's one criteria. But if your value is, like I always say, working with a coach or an editor who's good at what they do and is able to give you that insight from their experience and knowledge is like having an MFA on you, on your story. Like it's the most personal education you can ever get. And I have lost count of the number of people, which is the best thing I ever hear about my writing, who say to me, I learned more from working with you about writing than I've ever learned doing anything else. Not because of me or, you know, I passed down all this information from the mount, but because I know how to ask questions that help you learn to think about your writing in a deeper way. And I know that's what book coaches do as well. And that's a skill you get to take everywhere you go going forward as your writing deepens.
Well, that's exactly right. And what I find frustrating is people at the beginning of their career or new to writing often underestimate how much there is to learn. It's, you know, you and I both, right? You and I have both been in this business more than 30 years, each of us. And I still have things I need to learn, basic things. But also then the industry's changing so fast. And, you know, so when we think about the intellectual complexity of writing a book, the emotional complexity of writing a book, the entrepreneurial complexity of writing a book, there is a lot. And I sometimes see other endeavors. I'm not trying to throw any endeavor under the bus, but I was going to say gardening. Like, can you master gardening? I mean, I guess. Like, I have friends who just know lots of things about plants and what's going to work in that place and what's not, and what's going to bloom at what time of year and what's not, and what's going to attract the butterflies. And like, there's a lot to understand and to know and all of that. But when I think about the number of decisions somebody has to make to write a good book, it's staggering.
And yeah, I say it's like you're the conductor of an orchestra of an infinite number of instruments, but also you have to compose it. And also you're playing every instrument and also you're the audience.
Yeah. And you have to sell the tickets and, yeah. Right? Like, yeah, it's nuts. And what I like about your book is that it gets at, it's not a craft book. There's so many good craft books. And I know you talk about some of them in the book, and we all need and love the craft books for sure. But what you're getting at in this book is all the other pieces to what you need to learn and master in order to be an effective, to have a career as a writer.
and to sustain it and to be and to be satisfied by it, because it's not just about the writing and the craft. That's just a piece of it.
Yeah. So I'm curious about that, to be satisfied by it. Do you and all the people that you know and encounter and edit and guide, do you find that writers are for the most part satisfied with their careers or no?
It's an interesting question. Some yes, some no. And satisfied for the moment sometimes. Like, what I find satisfaction is often defined as is I got the cherry. I got the thing. I was little Pac-Man and I got my Pac-Man thing that I wanted, which is something I talk about in the book, is if we're orienting around goals that we want, where our happiness lies, many of which are out of our control. Like, we have no control over whether we get an agent or a publisher, or even if we self-publish, we have no control over how well our book does or the reviews that we get. So much of these outcomes of our career that often are that brass ring are not within our control. And so if that's where happiness lies, I think it's hard to be satisfied. But if happiness lies in the things you do control, which is the path that you take with your career, the time you spend on it, the money you spend on it, what you get out of it, its intrinsic rewards, then that to me is the key to being able to be happier with it and sustain it no matter what. I work with, one of the things that brought this book into being was how many authors I work with who are experiencing a lot of the challenges that we have in the industry, like your editor at your publishing house leaves and you're orphaned because your new editor isn't very excited about you, or
it seems like the new normal. I mean, it's wild.
Yeah, publishing is always kind of in flux, or has been as long as I've been in it, but not like lately, right?
Yeah.
It seems like that. Or, you know, you don't get renewed for a contract that you hope to get renewed for. Or so another thing I see a lot lately is that you're being encouraged to use a pen name because you didn't have good enough sales. So everything's really sales and marketing dependent. Or if you're going to indie publish and you want to be on the track to making a lot of money, it requires you put out X number of books a year and do this much marketing and put this much into advertising. And that may or may not suit your needs. And so when those results you want don't happen, you're not happy and you're not satisfied.
Yeah.
But I've talked to so many authors who tell me that the happiest they ever were was either before they published or between publishing contracts. Yeah, because they didn't, they got back in touch with the thing that made them want to do this in the first place. And that's the thing, I think, if we can stay in touch with that, I call it what drives us. And it's the same thing I talk about when I talk about finding out what drives your character. It's deeper than just your goal, which is the cookie that you're looking for. It's deeper even than your motivation. I want to be a best-selling author because I want to make a living at my writing. But what's under that? Why did you want to do this thing in the first place? We've chosen this crazy career where the chances of success are really slim. Success in the sense of big money, big fame. And yet, we choose it anyway. Can you remember why you did that? Was it really just because you wanted the fame and fortune? And if it was, please allow Jenny and I to disabuse you of that notion right now. Because that's, you know, you may be Stephen King, but probably not.
Yeah.
So if you're not, is this still something you, like the way I think of it is, what is my day-to-day life? That's where my happy lives, is that I can say in all seriousness that my worst day at work is still a pretty good day. Yeah. I get to do things I love every day. I talk about in the book, years ago, I said I was writing fiction at the time and I wasn't published yet. And I told a friend, gosh, my perfect life would be if I could write for part of the day and edit for part of the day. And of course, I'm thinking when I'm a big famous person and don't have to work as hard as I work now. But I realized that has been my life for almost my entire career. Mm. I have always written in the morning and always edited for 30 years anyway, edited in the afternoons. And I already had the thing that I said was my holy grail.
Yeah.
And that really brought me, that was sort of a wake up call for me of, oh, it's not the someday reward that is going to make my life rewarding or meaningful. It's the day after day after day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really well put. And it's, well, I'm going to share a story that's kind of intense, but it's okay. Cause this just happened. I know, right? This just happened to me yesterday. What year are we in? 20? Well, it'll be 2025 when people are listening to this. So, I will be a 25-year breast cancer survivor. And, I had cancer when I was very young, and I was yesterday in, my primary doctor sent me for an ultrasound because she didn't like a thing that she felt. So it was sort of out of the order of the regular checkup progression thing. And in my mind, I guess just because this is what our mind does, I dismissed it as like, this is not a big deal. So whatever, I'll just go and I'll do it. It's 15 minutes and I'm out, you know. So then I'm there yesterday in the ultrasound room, and this very kind technician was telling me, you know, how it goes and blah, blah, blah. And as things progressed, she got more and more quiet. And then she said, you know, I'm going to go get the doctor. And she walked out of the room. And in that space, lying there, I was like, oh, okay, here we are again. This is what it's going to be again. Like in my mind, I went all the way there, you know, and I'm a new grandmother. And I was like, well, at least I got to meet my grandchild. Like I was going all the way there. But what was interesting, the reason I bring this up, is that what flashed through my mind in those minutes was, man, I'm so grateful for the life that I've lived. And I was going through all the things, just the people that I've loved and the family that I've built and all the things. And I thought of my work and I sort of landed on that place in my work. And I thought, I have just been so lucky to do the work that I have gotten to do. And at the moment, it's not so much writing books. It's training other people to help writers. It feels adjacent to writing, but it's not exactly that. But it's
midwifery.
Right. It's the work that I've chosen. But the feeling of I will do this until the very end because it means so much to me and because I love it. And that it's that test they always say, like, if you knew you were only had certain days left, what would you do in that day? So it's getting to the same thing you're talking about in a very dramatic way. But would I keep doing this thing if I knew my days were numbered? And that full-bodied yes, I would, was so comforting in a way because of what you're talking about, the idea of it's the doing of the thing. It's the daily doing of the thing that has brought me so much joy. And like, are some days awful? Yes. Are some days hard? Yes. Are there some days where I think I really should have been an ex? For sure. But I told you it was kind of a dramatic story, but it just so perfectly illustrates it what is. You're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like I just had that experience. I just had it. And it was very moving to me when it was all over and everything was fine.
It's moving to me right now. Like the fact that you can say right now, first of all, I hope everything was okay.
It was fine. I'm fine, guys.
Good.
but you know, some days somebody listening might not be fine. Tomorrow I might not be fine. Like we don't know. We just do not know ever. But
this is all we know that we have. And can you say right now, would you say that, like that you were in that situation and you were able to say,
yeah,
so grateful. I've loved this.
Yeah.
I hope that that's what we can all get to with our writing is not that you think, oh, I never got to where I hoped I would get, but I did this. This is what my life looked like. The question I use... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, don't you feel that I feel so much desperation in writers around They don't want to die before doing the thing. They want to prove to themselves that they could do the thing that they thought they could do, or I could write this book, or I have this story, or I could be this, I could do this. Those are the deeper things I think you're talking about, the proof to your own self, or the rising up of your own voice and talent, not so much like I made X amount of money.
So what does that mean at the end? I think an inordinate amount about death. I don't know why. but one of my, well, I can understand that. You've brushed with it. I haven't yet, knock wood, but I think it does give you an awareness that's very healthy. I often think about the end, and when you are there, what will you look back? There's that, is it Bonnie Ware, the hospice nurse?
The five
regrets of the dying.
Quote her in your book.
Because I love that list, and it's about the things she has heard as a hospice nurse over and over from people who are dying that they regret about their lives. And it's not, the old cliche, I wish I'd worked more. It's things like, I wish I had lived a life true to what I really wanted. I wish that I had let myself trust myself more. I wish that I had not lost touch with the people I care about. So those are the values I think that we have to measure our lives by, not did someone else deem me worthy enough to publish me or give me money or did people know my name, but what did that look like day after day? And can you say, the question I use in the book is, if somebody said to you, if you don't like to imagine death like you and I do, Jenny, if somebody said to you right now, you will never reach the heights to which you aspire, you will never hit the goal you're trying to hit externally, would you still do what you're doing? So I asked myself that when I used to be an actor, when I was just a little baby person. And I realized I actually didn't want the goals of that career. I didn't want to lose my privacy. I didn't want to always be scrambling to stay relevant. So I quit acting. And with fiction, I thought, I don't really think the rewards of fiction intrinsically are not enough for me to want to pursue it. But day after day after day with editing, it still is because of what you said. I love Julie. You recently interviewed Julie Arts, and I think she said something about the number of stories she can put into the world by helping other authors is profoundly greater than the number you could put into the world on your own. And story to me is everything. And so I get to help people put their stories in the world every day, and I get to help them be a handmaiden to their creativity. And I can't think of anything more rewarding from my life.
Yeah, I love hearing you say that, because there are people, I'm one of them too, that lifting up other people becomes the calling of your work and your life in those ways. And the work of an editor and a book coach is so very specific. You're so specifically in there with a story and a character or a situation and a writer, and that's the part I love, is the engagement with the creative process. And so for back to your book and your idea of a sustainable and satisfying writing career, the big takeaway is it's totally in your hands.
If you choose for it to be, it can be. But you have to redefine what that means for you, I think.
Yeah.
It's not in your hands whether you get to be James Patterson.
Yeah.
It is in your hands, though, what your writing career looks like and the rewards that you get out of it.
Well, it's a really beautiful book, and it is filled with resources and tools that can help people along the way at various places. Where would you send our listeners to learn the most, other than to buy the book, The Intuitive Author, but where on your website is the best place for them to land if they want to access some of the resources and tools you mentioned?
The website's pretty resource rich. It's foxprinteditorial.com, and there's a bunch of free stuff on there, a lot of recommendations and other resources that I think are wonderful. I've got free downloadables. I've got a YouTube channel where I talk to, I offer editing tips and I talk to other authors. I have a weekly blog where I talk about craft and writing business and writing life. My books are there. My online courses are there. Those are the two paid things probably. And everything else is just, please help yourself to these resources, because I do feel like a rising tide lifts all boats. And I do love this work. So most of it is just available.
Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And again, it is Tiffany Yates Martin, the intuitive author, How to Grow and Sustain a Happier Writing Career.
Thanks
for joining us.
I always love talking to you. Thanks so much.
And for our listeners, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop. Thank you.